Okay, guys, we are in chapter 4 of 1 Samuel, if you would turn there, please. We have already, in the first three chapters, seen many wonderful spiritual truths. And it just gets better from here. The book of Samuel, and even into Kings, the story just continues to build and in my opinion, gets better as we go. We have seen young Samuel's first prophecy, and it was indeed a tough one. You guys remember that he had to remind Eli, which was his spiritual dad, so to speak. I mean, Eli had his problems letting his two sons kind of run rampant and appreciating or officiating as the priest instead of dad, and making sure those two boys weren't in that office because they really had no respect or reverence for anything of the Lord. He had his problems, but by the same token, I believe that he really was a man after God's own heart most of his life. I think he let his parenting kind of get the best of him. But again, he was Samuel's spiritual father. And then he has to turn around and tell Eli that God is going to fulfill his promise, not only against him, but against his sons. And ultimately, he's going to fulfill that prophecy against all of Eli's household. And that is because Eli knew what was the right thing to do and didn't do it. You know, you've heard people say there are sins of omission and sins of commission. And without getting into that a lot, there are sins that we all commit, sins of omission. I call them sins of stupidity, sins of being human, sins of things that we just do because we are human beings. And that is exactly what Jesus Christ went to the cross for, was to forgive us of that. Then we have the sins of commission. Now, those are the ones where we know what's right, but we do it anyway. Now, I don't think that there's a human being alive that has not trespassed in this area, done this at one time or another. But those are the areas that are a bit more dangerous, a bit more risky for us in our walks in the Lord, because we've tasted and seen that the Lord is good. We know what the Lord requires, and we choose to step out into an area that we know he will not possibly bless. So those are the areas we really, really, really need to be very, very careful of. The Bible often refers to those as repetitive sins, those that we know better, but we keep doing those sins even though God tells us and warns us. And we have a very gracious and loving God. He always tries to get our attention in subtle ways and in sweet and kind ways. But there are some times when he gets a little more, he gets a little louder. He gets a little more, like we do as parents. You know, if you can take care of it softly, you do. But if you can't, sometimes you have to get in there a little bit deeper and take care of those issues with your children. Now, Eli knew, from our last study, he knew what was right and he knew what was wrong, but he let his fatherhood, he let his love for his boys kind of get in the way and dictate to him, and he let them get by with things that he would not have allowed anyone else in the world to get by with, especially with them officiating as priests. The tragedy is they were officiating as priests and they didn't have any clue who God was. Not at all. They should have just not been in that position at all. So ultimately, you guys, we have seen in the past that the unnamed prophet came and told him this was going to happen. And then God follows it up with Samuel. And this is Samuel's first prophecy as a young man. It could have been as early as 12, 13 years old. And he has to turn around and give this prophecy back to Eli. Now, I see this a bit as a test for Samuel, because God will give us no more than we can handle, and God often gives us small amounts before he gives us larger amounts. Those who are faithful in the small things, God will bless with many things. And so God often will see how we're going to do and what we're going to do with something before he gives us a greater thing. And you guys have heard me say before, oftentimes we're asking for God's blessing in our life, and we're wondering why the Lord is not giving us that blessing. But sometimes we've asked him for guidance, and he's told us what to do, and we haven't done the first step. So oftentimes we're asking him for the next step, and we just really haven't taken care of the first step. This was Samuel's first step. He needed to be faithful. God needed a man who would be his mouthpiece, who would be his vessel, who would do his bidding, who would say what he wanted them to say. He had many people. He had a whole kingdom full of people who would do what they wanted to do, but he didn't have many who would do what he wanted them to do. Now, that begs to ask the question, I mean, I would think tonight, is it true today? Does God have many who are in the kingdom, but how many does he really have that will be his mouthpiece? How many does he have that will really do his bidding, that will say the things he wants them to say, to do the things that he wants them to do? I believe that God is able to do amazing things in the lives of those who will allow that to happen. But oftentimes, I don't know what it is. I don't know if we're afraid to step in that deep. I don't know if we're afraid it's going to take away some of our liberties or our freedoms. I'm not exactly sure what it is. But oftentimes we settle with so much less of God than what I believe that he really wants to give us. Well, young Samuel seemed to pass this test with flying colors. He was obedient to the Lord. He did what the Lord wanted him to do, even though it had the potential to break Eli's heart and destroy the relationship between this young man and his mentor. But you might remember that Eli accepted it graciously, a little too late, but he did accept it graciously. In these next two chapters, we're going to be covering and seeing that the Ark of the Covenant has been captured or will be captured by the Philistines, but it doesn't end up being quite the treasure that they thought it would be. And so it ends up being to where they can't get it out of their place fast enough. After it starts having its effect in an ungodly land, they almost just can't get rid of it fast enough. Now, before we take a look at this battle between Israel and the Philistines, I want to give you a little bit of background, if I can. I want to give you a couple scriptures to help you kind of set the stage, to help you know what the national climate is of the time. First thing I want you to do is turn to Judges chapter 13, verse 1. Keep your thumb there in 1 Samuel chapter 4. In 1 Samuel chapter 4, and then turn to Judges 13, 1. Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And here it is. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Now, those of you that have been here and gone through the studies of the Judges, and you've done a little Old Testament study, you know that God has a prescribed way of spiritual life, especially in the Old Testament, the tabernacle, the temple, and on through. The spiritual life, that was the pulse of Israel. God's people were supposed to march by the beat of a different drummer. They were supposed to march by his drum. He was supposed to be close to their hearts. They were supposed to be close to his heart. And that combination provided a powerful and a strong nation. I believe it's still true. And I believe that the closer that we are to God, any person, any individual, any nation, the closer that nation, the more blessings is going to be upon that individual or that group or that nation. And I also believe that the further away we step from God, whether that's intentional or unintentional, because it can happen either way, we can just deliberately step away from God because we're not getting what we want, or we can just drift from God because we just get so preoccupied with a lot of things. And that's easy to do too, isn't it? We're kind of like a great illustration, or the great example that's used in the Word is sheep. And if you, when I was a boy being raised up out in Peoria, there were a lot of sheep herders out there. And it is a great illustration or a great example, because they'll get their head down and graze and walk off the end of a cliff. They don't see anything in front of them or anything behind them. They don't notice much of anything that's going on. They just get their head down and they get going. And before you know, they can be away from the would be a flock of sheep. Right? So they're just away from everything, and then they're vulnerable. Well, we too can do that. We can just get our head down and get busy with life, work and family and everything else, and before we know it, we've kind of just stepped away from God. We might not be in any major sin. There might not be any evil intent in our heart, but we've just kind of stepped away. We've gotten out of the habit of doing the things that we need to do to keep our life in order. So it's the same with Israel. When they were walking close to God, God's hand was upon them, God's blessing was upon them. But the further away they got from the Lord, they would end up in total slavery. Some other nation would end up being stronger than them, defeat them in battle, and then they would go into servitude for 6 or 7 years, or 7 or 8 years, or 10 or 15 years, or 50 years, or 400 years, like they were in Egypt. And the cycle sort of kept repeating, and you would think, gosh, don't they learn? But remember, there's a whole new generation every few years. And no matter what the parents have learned, sometimes it's hard to pass that on to the next generation, and it's extremely hard to pass that on to the third generation. So you would have this cycle repeating. And those of you that are parents and you're dedicated to God and you say, you know, as for me, my house, I'm going to serve the Lord, you're going to do everything you can to pass that on to your children. But they may not want it. Or at least they may not want it to the degree that you've found it. A little religion for them might be fine, but for you, it's a total commitment to God. Now, if you have children that are marginally in the Lord, what do you think is going to happen to the grandchildren? Right? Their liberty is going to become excess for the grandchildren. So, you know, it's very, very difficult to carry that on from generation to generation. So here again, we see it. The Lord had delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Now, if you go on down a little bit in Judges chapter 13 and take a look at verse 5, please go there with me, please. We read about Samson. He says, "For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. And he shall begin, that's the key for our verse tonight and our context tonight, he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines." So, in the life and in the time of Samson, he's going to begin to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines. He judged for approximately 40 years, according to Judges 15, verse 20. So in part, Samson began that deliverance. But the full deliverance did not come until Samuel. So look at 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 2, 3, and 4. "So it was that the ark remained in Kiriath Yarim," that's actually, I think, how that's spelled, "a long time." It was there for 20 years. "And all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, 'If you return to the Lord with all of your hearts, then you put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths from among you, and you prepare your hearts for the Lord, and you serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines.' So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtoreths, and they served the Lord only." Now you might go, well, that's Old Testament, that's the law. We don't live under the law, we live under grace. Absolutely true, but I can promise you this because I've lived it and I have experienced it. When I put away the other things I worship, and I worship God, my life works better. You call that law, you call that grace. I call it position. The closer to the campfire you sit, the warmer you get. The more you sit close to Jesus, the more you are in the center of his will and his heart beats with yours, then the more life makes sense. It just makes sense. And God's hand is upon your life, and you kind of just intuitively, spiritually know what to do, and you're making good decisions, and you're making good decisions for your business, you're making good decisions for your marriage, you're making good decisions for your children, because your heart is beating with God's. So, it is still true, if you return to the Lord with all of your hearts and put away the foreign gods and the Asherahs from among you and prepare your heart before the Lord and serve Him only, He will deliver you out of the hands of the Philistines. What are your Philistines today? Lousy job? No money? Facing school or a car that won't start or run half the time? You know, we're always up against some kind of an enemy, aren't we? Now, I don't know about you guys, I don't want to go into battle and lose. I don't like to lose. But I think most of us would say we have gone into battle unprepared without the armor of God on, not full armor of God is not on, and we've lost. We've lost some of those battles. I have had men and women tell me that their marriage disintegrated because they were not walking with the Lord. In one case, I remember a couple where neither one of them were walking with the Lord. They ended up getting a divorce. They both remarried someone else, and then they both came to know the Lord. Their whole families dedicated their lives to the Lord, and then they became the best of friends. That doesn't happen often, does it? But it happened in the Lord. But the other happened outside of Jesus Christ. Life is just much more difficult than it is intended to be. God wants us to be victorious. He's promised to be on our side. He told Israel, I'll bless you. Keep me close to you. Keep your spiritual life together. That's what the whole temple and the sacrifices were all about. We have Jesus. He's the ultimate sacrifice. We don't have to do that anymore, but we still need to keep Him close to us. You say, well, He lives inside of my heart. Yes, but you and I can quench that Holy Spirit. So the more you and I are living in such a way that we're able to allow the Spirit of God to work in our hearts, then the more victorious we're going to be in life. Let me give you another one. 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. So the Philistines were subdued, and they did not come any more into the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Then the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel from Ekron to Gath, and Israel recovered its territory from the hands of the Philistines. Also, there was peace between Israel and the Amorites. You see, God not only helps us win the battle, but He starts restoring our life. When you and I finally get committed to God, God begins to put our life back together. You notice that they ended up having victory. How long were they slaves in this case? You guys remember what did he say? 40 years. Have you ever felt like you've been fighting the same battle for 40 years? It's not uncommon at all to hear people say, I've been trying to not drink for 20 years. I've been trying to not do drugs for 20 years. I've been trying to overcome this enemy for 20 years. Guys, don't give up. Don't give up. The enemy wants you to quit. The enemy wants you to give up. He wants the enemy to, our enemy, Satan, God's enemy, Satan, he wants you to give up and let your enemies just roll you over, overcome your life, despair, loss of hope. But we see here, God gave them victory once they got it in order. Now, I'm not saying that getting it in order will be easy if we have a life or a pattern in our life that leads us to sin. You know, we don't get there overnight. We establish friendships and relationships, sometimes bad friendships, bad relationships, bad habits that lead us down those paths. So it's not always instantaneous. It's not always, hey, I'm cured tomorrow. But if you and I will give our lives to God completely, 100%, and begin to do what He asks us to do, He'll start restoring. And one day, you will be victorious. God will give you victory over those enemies. And not only will He give you victory, He will begin to restore what's been stolen from you. He'll begin to add back into your life all the blessings that He wanted you to have all along the way. Now, I could pick out a couple of you right now and ask you to come up here and testify that and you would, because I've watched it happen in your lives. God's blessed you above and beyond anything you could ever possibly imagine once you gave your life and dedicated it to Him. All right, guys, let's look at verses 1 through 3. The word of Samuel came to all of Israel. Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines and encamped beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines encamped at Aphek. Then the Philistines put themselves in a battle array against Israel, and when they joined battle, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed 4,000 men of the army in the field. And when the people had come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from Shiloh to us, that when it comes amongst us, it may save us from the hand of our enemies." Now, how many of us know that it's a lot easier to ask a question than it is to really want to know the answer to the question? You ever asked a question when you really didn't want to know the answer? Sometimes you already know the answer, but you ask the question hoping it'll be different than what you already know the answer to be, right? At least I know that when I was raising my kids did that quite often. They pretty much always knew where we stood, but sometimes they would ask the question hoping that they would get a different answer. Well, they're asking the question, and it almost appears as though they're asking the right question. Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? But here's the tricky part, guys. Instead of them waiting upon the Lord to get His answer and then acting accordingly to whatever God answered to them, they come up with a quick solution. They decide they will settle for what they think is an absolute fix to their problem, a solution to their problem. Now, I've never done that, have you? Have you ever asked God, "God, why is it so hard? God, why is this so difficult? Lord, why am I being defeated by this stuff?" And before God can ever answer, I've already helped him out, I've already given him an answer, and I've already come up to the solution. Especially when he doesn't answer me, when he doesn't understand how important this is to me, and he knows the time's running out, and he just chooses not to answer me. I don't know what it is with the Lord, but it's always 11:59 and counting with God. Maybe that's part of that test that we saw with Samuel. Maybe it's part of seeing if we're really going to wait upon Him. Now, if one day is the same as any other day to God, if time is irrelevant to God, He's really not in any hurry, is He? And that usually freaks us out because we have so many time limits. Don't you understand, God? You know, guys, I think we can... Well, I won't go into that. It's too Star Trek-y. But God's not bound by time. God's not bound by time. Okay. Well, instead of waiting upon God, they ask the right question. But they don't ask the right question with the right heart. It's not a question of really wanting to know. It's more of a question of kind of like we ask, "God, I'm your son or daughter. Why would you allow this to happen to me?" As though it's expected for God to deliver us out of everything, even if we're not walking with Him. Even if we're not honoring Him with our life. Well, we already read out of 1 Samuel, chapter 7, verse 3, why they were defeated, right? He had already told them, if you return to the Lord with all of your heart, put away the gods, then God will bless you and you will have victory over the Philistines. They didn't have victory over the Philistines, so what's the conclusion? They really weren't ready to walk with God. You know, it amazes me at how we can get to that position where we think it's better to do something else than it is to walk with God. No matter what it is, there's nothing out there that's better than walking with the Lord. But somehow we think if we walk with Him, we're not going to get the job we want or get the person we want or get the promotion we want or get the life that we want. But exactly the opposite is true. When you and I completely devote to Him, when we completely love Him, when we walk with Him and put away all the other things, that's when life is the best. That's when you're the most fulfilled. You have the Proverbs, right, that talk about it's better to have a little in faithfulness than to have a whole bunch without the faithfulness. It's better to have just a small amount and be walking in the presence of God than it is to have all the riches in the world and not have it. You know what that means? You know how that translates? It's better to sell pencils on a corner being filled with the Spirit of God than it is to be the CEO of a great corporation and making millions a year and not have God. God can give you and I the peace that passes all understanding, the joy that's incomprehensible, by having the Spirit of the Lord in our hearts. But the ark's easier. The ark is just an easier solution. The ark becomes their good luck charm. Christians have good luck charms. You know that? I want you to think about it a minute. What might be your good luck charm? You're going, Pastor, you're insulting me. I'm a Christian. I don't have a good luck charm. Well, don't be too quick. Think about it. What might be your good luck charm? When things are not going right in your life, what do you grab for? Some Christians grab for church. I got to get back in church. I got to get my attendance right. Some people grab for their pocketbook. I haven't been tithing. If I write out a big check to God this weekend, everything will be okay. I haven't been praying enough. I just need to go in and I need to pray enough. See, all of those things can be good with the right heart, but they can be nothing more than charms without God. You see, they mean nothing without God. And the reality of it is, what do you think God wants most? You and me. He wants us. He wants our heart. All of those other things, they come after the heart, but he wants the heart first. When he has our heart, he has everything else. But most importantly, he wants our heart. Well, it's easier for them, rather than giving their heart, let's just get the good luck charm. Now, keep in mind, the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of God, was the presence of God, right? It was the presence of God. God was there. The Shekinah glory of God rested upon the Ark of the Covenant. So it was the presence of God. But they're living in such a way that has proved that they really don't desire his presence. They really don't want his presence on a daily basis. They just want to add him in once in a while where he's needed. Boy, oh boy, it's easy to do that. Don't want God every day. I don't want God every moment. I don't want God every hour. Cramps my style, but I don't mind bringing him in once in a while in an emergency. I'll pull him in once in a while, rub the lamp, make my wishes, have him get back in. Now, here's what's amazing, to think that God would be okay with that. They think that God's going to be okay with this. Look at verse 4. So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of the Hosts, of the Lord of Hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. Who? Who's there with the Ark of the Covenant of God? Mutt and Jeff. Dumb and Dumber. And the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp. All of Israel shouted so loudly that the earth shook. Now when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What does this sound of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" Then they understood that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp. So the Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for such a thing has never happened before." Actually, it had, but if you're not walking with God, you wouldn't know. "Woe unto us! Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness." Well, I kind of emphasized who the ark was with, Hophni and Phinehas. And because of what we know about these two, being in the hands of the Philistines was most likely not any worse. Now, here's the question I got to ask myself. If I have God in my hands, how do I treat him? If I have the Spirit of the living God within my reach and in my touch, how do I treat that? Does it blow me away? Am I in awe that the Spirit of the living God would be that close to me? He's even closer than that. He's in my heart. He lives within my heart. The ark of God is right here, and he lives within my heart. How do I deal with that? How do I treat that? What kind of respect do I have that? What kind of honor do I have for that? Notice that the Philistines understood that this was the presence of God. They knew that the presence of God had come into the Hebrew camp, and they were afraid. They were extremely afraid, and they should have been. But you got to give their commander credit, because he's about to call them to a higher calling. Now remember, everybody knows what's happened in Egypt. Everybody knows about the plagues. Everybody knows that the Hebrews have Jehovah. Everybody knows about the Ark of the Covenant. They know what kind of power is in this. And they are extremely, extremely afraid of going up against this. And rightly so. They should have been if the children of Israel had been walking right with God. We have a tremendous power at our disposal if you and I are walking with God. We have the power to defeat. We have the power to win. We have the power to be victorious. But look at their commander. You got to give this commander some credit, because in the face of what would seem like insurmountable odds, he's able to pull these guys together. Look at verse 9. Be strong and conduct yourselves like men, you Philistines, that you do not become servants of the Hebrews as they have been to you. Conduct yourselves like men and fight. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. There was a very great slaughter, and there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. So the commanding officer reminds them how they have treated Israel for these 40 years that they have dominated them. And he asks them, do you really want Israel to return the favor and become your captors? That seems to be enough to motivate them. So they pull it together and they go to battle. But guess what? Did you notice that the magic box didn't work? Did you notice that the ark of God didn't work? Is that because the Spirit of God didn't live in the ark of God? No. It's just that God's smarter than that. I think that sometimes we just don't give him enough credit. We just don't give him enough awe. We don't give him enough respect. We don't give him enough place in our life. And you know what I found is that when my relationship with the Lord begins to slip a little, I start having to have artifacts in my life. I start having to have the idols in my life. I have to start having the religious things in my life. Because if I'm around religious things, it starts to feel a little bit like it used to feel when I had the real presence of God in my life. It's not uncommon at all to see Christians or religious folks with religious artifacts either on their bumpers or hanging from their, you know, on the dashboard of the car or hanging from the mirror. But often, that's all it is. There's no burning in their heart with the Spirit of God. 30,000 men lost their lives. And I'm going to even back up to say here, I think they lost it needlessly. I don't think God wanted him to be defeated. And I can go back and I can give you chapter and verse. I could probably give you 100 different verses even up until now where God has told them he would go before them and they would be victorious over all of their enemies. And every place they set their foot, they would be, that he would give them that land as long as they stayed close to him. This was not his intent. This was not his will. He didn't want this to happen. And guys, he doesn't want you to lose any territory. He wants you to be victorious. He wants you and I to be victorious. He wants you and I to be able to go through each day knowing that we fought well and that we stood our ground and we did the things that we were supposed to do. Now, this doesn't cheapen God's grace. It doesn't take away from God's grace because without that, we can't do any of this. But because we have God's grace, it should cause us to be so aware of his presence and his love and his majesty in our life. And his desire for you and I to be able to be victorious. Now, let me say this. When you and I step back from that, when we resign from that, when we don't step up to the plate, how many lives get lost? How are your children doing in the Lord right now? Do you know? Some of you are trying to do this battle all by yourself because your husband or your wife is not in it with you. And you've got this whole burden of trying to raise your children for Christ all by yourself. But you know what? God sees that and he knows that and he'll honor your faithfulness. But sometimes you have a husband and a wife who are neither one really committed to it. Or you have a husband that wants to play around or a wife that wants to play around. And they think, you know what, this is my business. I'm not hurting anybody. It's just, the only one that's hurting is me. Wrong, 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 wrong. Dead wrong. Dead wrong. It cost 30,000 men their lives because Israel didn't want to have God instead of just the box. So we need to be careful. We have lives that we're responsible for and little lives that are watching us, whether they're children or grandchildren. Sin does not just kill us, but it can kill the people around us. It can destroy a marriage. It can destroy a life. Yeah, the magic box didn't work for them, and you know what? It doesn't work for us either. God wants the real McCoy. Look at verse 11. So, the ark of God was captured, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Then a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line the same day and came to Shiloh with his clothes torn and dirt upon his head. Now when he came, there was Eli sitting on a seat by the wayside, watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does this sound? Does the sound of this tumult mean?" And the man came quickly and told Eli. Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were so dim he could not see. Then the man said to Eli, "I am he who came from the battle, and I fled today from the battle line." Then he said, "What happened, my son?" So the messenger answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has been a great slaughter amongst the people. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead. And the Ark of the Covenant has been captured." Then it happened when he made mention of the Ark of God that Eli fell off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. 98 years old. Now, I would think at 98 years old, it's time to get in the recliner with the remote control and enjoy your life, right? Again, to kind of cruise out and enjoy what you got left. But here he is. He finds himself outside worrying about the Ark of God. The Hebrew word used there means afraid. He was afraid for the Ark of God. Now, I want you to also notice something. It didn't say he was afraid for his sons. Now, I'm not saying he's not, he wasn't, but it does mention specifically that he was afraid for the ark of the Lord. And it's not at the mention of the fact that his two sons are dead that he falls over backwards. It is at the mention of the ark of God and that it has been captured by the Philistines that he falls backwards and breaks his neck. Now, obviously, he loved his sons. We already know that. It was that fact that got him in trouble in the first place. He loved them at one time more than he loved the Lord. And maybe I'm making a big deal out of nothing, but it sure seems to me like that he got that back in order. It seems to me that here he is, he has got that back in the place that it needs to be. And God has fulfilled the prophecy of the unnamed prophet and also young Samuel. His family dies, leaving no one left for the priesthood. Now, please, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying he didn't love his sons. He obviously loved his sons. But I think it's commendable that at this time in his life, the ark of God, putting God back in the right place in his life, was of the utmost importance to him. Now, guys, we love our families, but we cannot love our families unless God is in the right spot in our lives. We're not being the best that we can be if God is not in the right spot in our lives. We can't be the best husband. We can't be the best father. We can't be the best wife or the best mother or the best grandparents. We just can't be our best unless God has that place in our hearts and in our lives. All right, let's close this up. Look at verse 19. Now his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, due to be delivered. And when she heard the news that the ark of God was captured and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and gave birth, for her labor pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women who stood by her said to her, "Do not fear, for you have borne a son." But she did not answer, nor did she regard it. Then she named the child Ichabod, saying, "The glory of God has departed from Israel, because the ark of God has been captured, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God has been captured." The ark of God, the presence of God. Indeed, the glory of God had departed from Israel, but he is not gone for good. Aren't you glad of that? How many times in our life have we felt like we have offended the Lord? Now, I know this is getting real personal. I don't mean this to be as heavy as it seems. But even as Christians, we can have things in our life where we just go, "Boy, that was a stupid thing. That was not a good move." Whether it's something we said or something we've done, and we're almost at a place where we're saying, "You know, Lord, I'm sorry. I don't want your presence not to be in my life." Now you're saying you're born again, you have the Spirit of God living in your heart, but we also know that the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, is a person, and that person can be hurt. Do I want to be victorious? Of course I want to be victorious. Do I want to know that the will and the power of God is in my life? That the Spirit of truth is in my life? And that he's living and breathing and my heart's beating with his, that I haven't just put him in a box. And I'm doing my best to stay in that zone where I know God is. You know, guys, I don't think it has anything to do with age. There are so many things out there that seek to pull us away. And I trust that the reason that the Lord gave me this message tonight is that there may be a few of us that are sitting out here and you're being pulled away. You're being pulled in another direction. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about that pulling that goes on in a Christian's life all the time. We know that that's there. But I trust that there may be one or two tonight that you're being pulled extraordinarily. You're being pulled away by something. And it might not be this horrendous sin. It could just be a thing. Eli loving his kids wasn't a sin. It was his extraordinary, abnormal love that caused him to put them before God, that caused him the trouble. So there may be something in our life that's not sin in and of itself, but it's got a hold of us, and it's pulling us away. It's taken everything away from us. The intimacy, the closeness with God, the time we used to have. And slowly but surely, it's making us weaker and weaker and weaker. So, guess what? They get victory over the Philistines. They get it right. Samuel tells them, you need to get it squared away with God, and when you do, God will bless. They get it squared away with God, and God blesses. That's always our call. No matter what's there, our God forgives. No matter what's there, our God will restore us and put us back on our feet, and we can be victorious once again. But it's always the same process. Like it says in Revelation, to remember from whence you've fallen. Remember your first love. Be able to come before the Lord and say, you know what, Lord, I'm sorry. And have God give you that sweet restoration, that sweet forgiveness, and you can stand victorious again in the Lord.